Instagram stole Snapchat stories, and a year later, they are still gloating about it. The man who popularized the singularity is responding to your email, so you don't have to. And two giant robots are going to battle to the death. Can we watch? All that and so much more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1823, recorded Wednesday, August 2nd, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we tell you a lot of the things you're going to need to know. A lot of the things. A lot of the tech.
Maybe not all of it, but a lot of it.
Maybe not all of it. Some of it you have to find out yourself.
Yeah.
I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Yes, you know, you spend some time researching it yourself. Maybe that sticks with you a little bit longer than the stuff we tell you. Isn't that how they say, like, when you, like, write it down,
right,
you remember it longer than...
Yeah, or, like, you can teach like a man to fish.
Yeah,
that's... Or give him some fish. I don't know, something like that,
Something like that.
Yeah. Tesla reported a smaller-than-expected loss today, causing the stock to swell in after-hours trading. The strong revenue was due to deliveries of the Model S and the Model X SUV, which calmed people down who thought... That everyone was just going to wait for the cheaper Model 3 and not buy anything. And in other Elon Musk news, the Hyperloop 1 passenger pod has taken its maiden voyage and nobody's brains turned to jelly. There was no one inside of it, but their brains didn't turn to jelly. The pod is powered by electric propulsion and uses magnetic levitation to travel through a low-pressure tube. And, of course, this company was first envisioned by Elon Musk, and it has broken its speed record.
Yeah, the low-pressure tube is similar to that of what you might have at 200,000 feet of altitude. I read that. Apparently, that pod hit 192 miles per hour in 5 seconds. So not only are the Tesla cars fast, so is the Hyperloop pod. Yeah,
the Tesla cars are not quite as fast.
They go really fast, really fast.
And they are selling fast. Tesla's averaging 800 Model 3 reservations per day since the last week's event. So 1,800 people a day are reserving a Model 3.
Dang, more than 400,000 reservations to date. And I mean, Tesla's doing some really good things right now. Obviously, the market is reacting to that. Their stock has risen more than 40% in the past year. It's up 50% since the beginning of this year. It's just been a great 2017 so far has been a great year for Tesla.
I still can't get over the upselling that goes on with the Model 3. Like, no autopilot. At $35,000, you get no autopilot. You get the fancy screen, but none of the good stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, I would rather have the opportunity to buy at the base level than have Tesla say, well, we're not going to offer it to you there and your buy-in starts at $45,000. You know, at least this gets people through the door. I'm sure there is, you know, for some people, I think that works, right? Like, I'll buy it so I get it and then I can choose to upgrade it down the line with my in-app purchase, the car.
I guess it sounds like when the phone, you know, when your mobile provider said, like, we'll give you this free phone and we'll give you another free phone every year. Yeah. And it's really like you end up paying $40 or $50 a month for it somehow. And it wasn't exactly free.
Yeah. And you end up dealing with a lot of other stuff like bloatware and everything on the smartphone side. In this case, you get a Tesla car. So I think like you're willing to like overlook it. You're like, I got a Tesla.
Okay.
I'm cool.
Yeah.
At least that's
eventually
what I'm
you'll get one.
Yeah, eventually, in a couple of years, they've delivered a total of 77 vehicles during the first half of 2017. They had projected during the last earnings call that they would, by the middle of the year, hit somewhere between 47 to 50,000. So they just made it. Just made it. It was but 1 year ago that Facebook-owned Instagram began its strategy of lifting core functionality from Snapchat, more specifically with the launch of Instagram Stories. Now, Instagram is sharing information on its user base that can easily be compared against Snap's own numbers. And as you might imagine, Instagram is sharing this because they're doing really good. Instagram Stories is a big driver of increasing time spent using the service, and half of the businesses currently on Instagram use Instagram Stories inquiries as a result of that engagement. At least that was the case in the past month that they evaluated and released the information on. Instagram Stories sees 250 million daily active users, and they kind of touted some numbers as far as the amount of usage, because that's a big part of what this is. They're saying with Instagram, 25 and under users spend more than 32 minutes per day, compared to what Snap had released very recently, same category, 30 minutes per day. So they're getting a couple of extra minutes there. And then over 25 users, Instagram, those users are spending more than 24 minutes per day on Instagram, compared to 20 minutes per day on Snapchat in the same group.
I cannot celebrate this story.
Okay.
To me, this story is Instagram basically stole Snapchat's boyfriend, and then a year later is gloating all over school. Look how many friends I have. Look how popular I am, and I still stole your boyfriend.
Yeah, I suppose so. Although it's the same. Although they didn't steal the boyfriend. The boyfriend still exists on Snapchat.
That's true.
So
we made a copy of your boyfriend.
Yeah, we cloned your boyfriend.
We made a copy of your boyfriend. And yes, we're using a clone of your boyfriend to become more popular. And
I suppose that makes it weirder, actually, now that you put it that
You're
way.
You're right. It doesn't really hold up.
But it's working for Instagram, right? I mean, and we talked about this before. It's the... I mean, just the sheer user base, the network effect, right? Instagram just, it has the Facebook user numbers to kind of drive more users into Instagram. And Instagram is just, they're doing a really good job of keeping them coming back, of differentiating it from Facebook and also separating it from what Snapchat is offering.
Yeah, and Snap is doing horrible. Like their stock stunk to the lowest point,
stunk works too.
$12.67 a share. Like a lot of the Snap employees are completely underwater in their stock. And yeah, I mean, I guess could they have patented this? I don't know. Copyrighted it? I'm not exactly sure what you do with something like this.
Yeah,
it's like
a little
an
late
idea.
For that.
And I don't know how I feel about stories. Like in my research today, I went through the Instagram stories and watched all of the ones that I hadn't watched because I never sit back and watch them. It felt a little bit, it's very passive. Mm. It is very, I mean, I think absorbing any social media is very passive, but at least you're kind of doing this. But just having all the stories come at you, and it was weird. It was like watching all these like intimate moments in some of my friends' lives. It was cute, like the people that I am actually close to, but the people that I just follow on Instagram that I'm not that close to, and it seems a little bit weird.
Like a little invasive. Like, yeah. Why am I watching this aspect of your life?
Right.
Why am I allowed into this window?
Yeah. And it's not quite as weird. Like, I have Snapchat too, but, I watch a lot of Flo's, Florence Ion, who's all, mm-hmm. I watch a lot of her stories, and it's just ridiculous things that she says. And she's about as fond of the Snapchat filters as I am, and I feel like we bond in that way. So it's different. It's not like into, it's just like her being weird, and I love it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned passive, and that just kind of reminds me of like, that's what we do when we sit down and we watch TV or we watch Netflix. And maybe for some users, this is, I mean, that's kind of the analog, right? Like, mm-hmm. maybe they aren't watching traditional content as much as they are. I've got time to spend, relaxing and sitting back and passively watching something. I'm going to passively watch the reality show that is all my friends' lives.
And that's what they hope. I mean, there was an ad. There was an ad smack in the middle or right at the end of watching all those stories. So that's what they hope. I think they call it like lean back entertainment or something. And that's what they hope, that's what kids and people, will all do. They'll mm-hmm. use this as their TV, and then they can shove a bunch of video ads in there and call it a day.
Yep.
If you have been wondering what Ray Kurzweil is doing, wonder no more. Kurzweil, the author, scientist, and futurist in charge of popularizing the idea of the singularity, is now a Googler responding to our emails for us, so we don't have to. A Wired profile says Kurzweil leads a small team of AI experts working on Smart Reply. That's the super useful Gmail feature that offers you suggestions of common replies based on the context of your emails. You just tap them and move on. Or click them if you're using it on the web or on your laptop. It's surprisingly accurate most of the time. It is always good for a laugh when it suggests a response that is totally bonkers. Kurzweil didn't invent Smart Reply, but the code that he and his team created runs the tool, and he says that the AI is just going to get better and better. eventually I personally hope it's capable of producing this whole show.
Or at the very least, making it so that we don't ever have to write email anymore because it just responds. It does the whole email.
Yeah. Well,
that'd be nice.
Well, that's the idea. It's like they use the example of, you know, someone sends you an email like, can you come to my party? And you say, yes, I can. And then it also says, what should I bring?
Right.
And then, you know, then the other email, it scans your refrigerator, knows what you have, puts it together, a recipe, and then I just made that up. But that would be cool, right?
One thing about Smart Reply that I've noticed right now, and by the way, Google feels very strongly about this, is no longer just an inbox. They've rolled it out to Gmail, so it's part of the bigger app, and even more people are using it. But one thing that I wonder about Smart Reply is so often, like I definitely use it a lot because in many cases, it's better than me punching out, you know, a two-sentence thing when all
thanks.
I really needed to do was like, thanks. Like, that's really all that anyone needed to know is like, thank you for that. And it proposes that. But I wonder, in doing that, how much you reinforce that it will always surface those same responses. Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of very similar responses that it's always spitting back. And they're, you know, all like two or three words and whatever. And it's like your vocabulary shrinks and shrinks and shrinks as a result of it.
Well, we got that one time that you got a response that was, send me a pic.
Yes.
It was so weird. And I was like, I didn't
get
that response.
And it was so out of, like, it didn't match anything. It was just like, why?
And I was like, do you send that to people a lot? Because I didn't get that response, Jason.
But mine knows?
Mine are like, thanks.
Who knows how that happened?
Thanks, interesting, and thanks for the heads up. Like,
yeah,
so,
I get thanks for the heads up a lot, too.
I don't know. I saw someone posted on Twitter that they had gotten, like, an email that was from their dad. And one of the suggested responses was, who are you? anytime AI is dumb, it is so amusing to us tiny-brained humans.
Yes, and Kurzweil is not a tiny-brained human. He's definitely very smart and does a lot of thinking around the singularity, potentially, and just kind of the development of AI. And he believes that the road to human-level intelligence for these systems is by narrow applications, at least at first. So Smart Reply kind of fits into that. And that right now what we're seeing is that these narrow applications are getting less and less narrow pretty rapidly. And so, you know, maybe we will see full emails written by Smart Reply someday soon. Any of those of you who are sick of email, you might not ever have to write them anymore. You might not know what any of them say because the computer's doing it all for you, but you might not have to write them.
Yeah, there was a list. They have a list of 29,000 replies, which I thought that number was, I don't know if I thought it was going to
and
be
send me a pic must have been one of those.
Send me a pic. I don't know. And, you know, Mike in the chat room is saying, I don't need help saying thanks for the heads up. But I will say that, yes, I don't need help saying that either. But if I have a ton of email where people are telling me things that are helpful, I'm either going to say that's way too much, I can't type responses, or I'm going to go through and use that. Pretty often.
For me, it's not even that intentional. It's just like I read through the email and I look down at the reply thing and what I'm about to say is there. So am I going to type it or will I just click it or tap it with my finger? You know, if I'm on mobile, it's way easier on mobile for me to tap that box and say thank you than it is for me to pull up the keyboard and type it out and misspell it and then whatever, you know, at least on mobile. On a computer, maybe a different story, like on a desktop computer.
I use it on the desktop too. But my point is that, you know, some people get so frustrated with email, they just ignore it all.
Yeah.
You know, and then you miss.
I'm
and I just feel like, I know you do.
I know you do. I don't hear back. And I'm like, what the hell?
But so I think for me, like I've tried to be inbox zero as often as I can. Like I should devote some time because I just feel like people deserve to, you know, to get a response that takes a little more time if that's what it needs, or sometimes just to get a response, say, I heard you. Thank you.
Acknowledged. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I need, a smart reply that says acknowledged. Mm-hmm. I got this. Earlier this week, Bitcoin forked. Don't know if you knew that. Creating a new digital currency to coexist alongside Bitcoin called Bitcoin Cash. The fork was the result of a longstanding issue for a few years now around how long transactions take to process in the original Bitcoin blockchain. Many feared that the forking would result in a tanking value for Bitcoin, but as it turns out, it minimally affected its value, and it still sits within a few hundred dollars of its highest value to date, trading at around $2,700. Bitcoin Cash, on the other hand, tripled its ICO price. Yes, ICO, that's initial coin offering, if you didn't know. And that now sits around $700. And I don't know, I find cryptocurrency fascinating, equally fascinating and equally confusing, because I struggle to really understand the whole mining aspect of it and how it gains value and everything. But it's happening. This split, this fork, places Bitcoin Cash already in the top three of cryptocurrencies right out of the gate. That's going to grow as more exchanges support it. But the biggest exchange, Coinbase, is not supporting it. They announced that they're not going to support it, at least in the short term. And that has the potential of a class action lawsuit kind of brewing, because people are wondering, like, for every Bitcoin that existed, there is now Bitcoin Cash, and that's not being passed through to anybody on Coinbase. So there's a potential issue there.
What doesn't make sense to me is that Bitcoin was supposed to make things more streamlined, easier, right? Like, there was going to be one currency. There wouldn't have to be like all of these, you know, million different currencies. And yet there are thousands of Bitcoin currencies. Like, mm-hmm. there are so many. It's very confusing to people. I think that the way money has worked, I think it was like so many things on the internet. Like, it started out with a great idea.
Started out with a vision.
But I think it is really confusing. And I think that's the worst thing when you're talking about money. Like, there's so much emotion around money. And so, like, when you cause a panic, and I think that's what people are. They're panicked. Like, is my money that's in Coinbase worth anything? Like, you know, what will this be worth? Like, I don't know. It tripled in price since last Tuesday. Okay, so I've missed out. I think, I don't understand. Like, I mean, I could spend the time really studying Bitcoin and understanding it, but from the outside looking in, it just seems like it was intended to be less confusing, and it has been more confusing.
Yeah, and I mean, at some point, I feel like I need to try Bitcoin for myself, to like get some Bitcoin or whatever and get in on it a little bit. If anything, just to learn it from the inside, because outside looking in, it still continues to be confusing. I remember when we took over TNT, about a year and a half ago, we early on had a story about Bitcoin, and pretty much the only reason I included it is because I wanted to force myself to research it and learn more about it. And I've read about it since, and I'm fascinated by it, but it's still for some reason really perplexing to me, this idea of like mining to find Bitcoin, and that is just out there, and that inherently has value once that's discovered. And it's just a very foreign world to me. I think the only way you realize you really learn it to another level is to own Bitcoin. So let's get into Bitcoin. What do you say?
Okay. Well, I will say that I do like that it's untraceable. Like, I do, I mean, not that I'm going to go on the dark web and, you know, buy just a bunch of stuff with Bitcoin, but I do think there should be, in the future, should be more ways. I mean, as we're moving into a cashless society, I think it's unfortunate that so much, that all of our transactions, if you don't use cash, can be tracked.
Yeah.
And I think we have the right to buy things without people knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Two giant bots are about to battle it out, and Mike Murphy from Quartz is here to tell us all the deets. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper, the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper, if you haven't heard us talking about it, is a virtual phone system designed for entrepreneurs. It works just like your traditional phone system, but it requires no hardware purchase. They have an iOS and an Android app, and then callers can reach you wherever you are on your mobile phone. So basically, it's like a receptionist, but just in your phone. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand. When you make a call, your caller will see your Grasshopper caller ID, and they will not see your personal phone number. So that's great if you want to keep the two separate. All you have to do is select a toll-free or a local number, record a custom greeting, and then add multiple extensions for your business. If you haven't thought about getting a toll-free number for your business, now is a good time to try to get one because it's good. It makes you look more professional. It's great for marketing. and it's easy to get. Set up department and employee extensions with custom call forwarding. You can forward to any phone in the world. Get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. You can also send and receive your SMS text messages right from your business number. Join over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 a month. And if you want to try it out, you have a 30-day money-back guarantee. So no reason not to try it out. So turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. If you want to save $50 on your order, you can because you're listening. So go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit. And we thank Grasshopper for their support.
If you've ever wondered whether you would finally witness the rise of the battle bots or the battle robots, wonder no more. It's coming, and not in the distant future either. Joining us to talk about this is Mike Murphy from Quartz. Welcome back, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. So I saw this article and almost immediately I was like, wow, this is a glimpse into the future. I don't know how epic it's actually going to be in reality, but I knew that we had to get you on to talk about this. The Megabots. Tell us a little bit about the group behind Megabots and what they've been building.
So I've been following this company for like literally 2 years now. They announced, I think it was like July 2015. Like they put this video on YouTube like, hey, we're a bunch of guys in America and we built this giant robot. And we know that Japan, there's a bunch of other guys who also decided to build a giant robot. And now we want to fight you, which is very American, to be fair.
Yes. And
so they said in, I think it was like literally July 2015, they're like, in 1 year, we fight. And, you know, now a little over 2 years later, they're kind of like, okay, we're finally ready. And to be fair, there were like all kinds of other crazy logistical issues involved in like fighting 20-foot tall, you know, 3-ton giant robots. So that you can kind of understand why there might have been logistical challenges. But so, you know, over the last 2 years, this group of they're like roboticists. A few of them have been kind of like in maker spaces for a long time. One of the founders has like reality TV experience. And so between all of them, they've been kind of deciding that actually what they want to do with this fight is not just host this like awesome robot fight, but more create like an actually interesting version of BattleBots. Like BattleBots is like cute and neat, and like sometimes stuff blows up, and sometimes you're like, oh, that's really cool, in like a NASCAR kind of like, right, way. But they want to build something that like legitimately you would actually be awestruck by, and it's a lot easier to be awestruck by like one of, you know, like one of those 20-foot robots than it is like a little robot that's shaped like a wedge of cheese that's going up against a little Roomba or something like that. So these robots have I don't know what the Japanese team has, but they have space for two people. And so there's like one guy who's sitting there controlling this giant, you see on the new robot, which on the right there, this giant like paintball cannon thing. Like the balls are like the size of like a, I don't know, like a volleyball. Like, yeah, they're quite large. And the video that they put up today is them like shooting them at like cars and other big targets. And like their big concern for this fight over the last 2 years, and like legitimately one of the logistics issues they've had has been like, how do we make sure that nobody dies here?
So do I see a chainsaw arm there? Does one of them have a chainsaw arm?
Yeah. So
Bert
they
wants
have,
to know. Yeah.
They have, they have, I forget what they call it, like modular arms. So I don't know how they would do that like in a fight. But yeah, so basically the arms on both robots can come off and they can put on whatever they want. And they've built a – so the one on the right on the screen right now has – on the right-hand side has the cannon arm with the paintballs. And on the left has like a giant like pincer claw thing that is – I forget where they said it was from, but it's like – you know, you can crush a car with it. They actually used it, the hole in the robot on the left, they used it to make that hole. But then they've also made like a giant chainsaw one. They've made like a giant drill one and like a few other ones that they can literally like hot swap and be like, all right, now you're a giant drilling robot sort of thing. And I don't know if there's going to be like rounds or like strategy for like, oh, you know, this robot looks like X, so we're going to try using component Y to destroy it. But I don't know. I'm like legitimately excited about this. There's never been anything like this, and that was my post. This is like the first giant robot fight
Well, there's been plenty of sci-fi fodder around this kind of like mech warrior thing. We've built it up to be a certain level. It's always super epic. Yet, I don't know, Victor, if you have the chance, if you scroll up from there, there's a video player that shows it in action. And it's kind of, you know, it's rolling along. It's not the fastest moving robot in the world. When it runs into things, it's not like it slams into them. It's like it gently pushes forward and eventually knocks it over. Is there any possible way that this battle could live up to our expectations?
Part of the video they showed today, I was actually surprised at how fast it moved. Like, I was expecting it to be kind of lame. But the new one, I mean, it looked like it was pretty fast. But, I mean, yeah, I would be really surprised if this is going to be like watching the 20-foot version of the, you know, Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. I would be very surprised if it is. But, you know, there's like some stuff they showed in the video, and this is the video from today. Like, right. Some of the stuff they showed in it was definitely like surprisingly impressive. The thing can move pretty fast. It can take corners tighter than I can on my bike. But, you know, when it was like, oh, go attack the other robot, they kind of moved in the same way, like one of those claws in like a, you know, in one of those like amusement park games would move. And it was like, well, that's kind of clunky. So, you know, they said today that they had always intended for this fight to be, you know, in front of a live ticketed audience. And they said today that, you know, for safety reasons, it won't be that, you know, they're not sure because they've never done anything like this, that it won't be. But I am also wondering if that actually allows them to, while they're recording it, because they haven't made it clear yet whether it's going to be live streamed or just recorded, televised, and then taped and sent out later. Like, I am actually wondering if, like, maybe that allows them to, given the quality of these production, you know, the quality of production of these videos, like, they know what they're doing. So I'm wondering if that actually is, you know, they're going to cut out all the awkwardness. They're going to cut out anything weird. Like this video we're watching right now makes it seem like this thing is going to like destroy these things. And maybe the US government should know about this robot and stuff like that. But in reality, it's like, yeah, like these are cool turns, but like when it goes to like shoot the cans, it kind of misses. And like when it goes to grab the robot at the end, it kind of like awkwardly hugs it. And it's like,
although you get a little power slide here, so that's kind of cool.
This is exceedingly impressive, and that's what I mean. Like, some of it is legitimately impressive, so I'm still hopeful that it's going to be a really cool fight. Yeah. And if we also have no idea, like, Suidobashi Heavy Industry, the company behind the Japanese robot, has not been doing these crazy promotional videos like Megabots has. So, you know, these guys could come out with this, like, apparently super cool tech and maybe get destroyed by Japan. We don't know.
Right.
That would be kind of awesome. I mean, it would suck to lose as an American, but, like, that could be very cool.
You want something exciting at the end of the day. Exactly. Yeah.
So, because it's not going to be in front of a live audience, are you expecting it's going to be, it might be like a sort of Michael Phelps versus the shark situation?
That was very strange. Yeah, I mean, maybe it could be. I hope not. I do hope that it's, like, a cool fight, and I really do hope that, you know, as Megabots wants, as the guys behind it want, like that this is the start of a fighting league, and that they start this media empire that they envision. And like in the time between when they came out with their last update video and this, they've gotten a new challenger. This Chinese group of roboticists has been like, we have built a giant robot, which they're calling Golden Monkey, which is awesome. And they're like, we want to fight both of you. So maybe this is like a round robin.
Man. Yeah, I mean, at this point, they're all lifting each other up. They're all potentially realizing that now is the time to strike and to get into this and challenge each other. I think the comparison to UFC is probably pretty fair. Maybe not as fast moving, but still, you know, this could be an entirely new league. I'm excited about it.
No jobs are safe from the robots, apparently.
Exactly.
Even the UFC fighters.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you said that you were afraid that they were afraid that people would die, are you talking about the people in this live audience they're not going to have, or the people inside? Like, are they sure the people inside are not going to die?
So literally the first conversation I ever had with these guys over 2 years ago was like, yeah, we really want to do this, but we are not sure about how we're going to live. This has always been a concern. At the end of the day, I mean, like any sport, it's an issue. Even like a relatively safe sport, like, you know, American football, that, I mean, it's not that safe, but like safer than giant robots. Like, there's always a concern about that sort of thing, and I think that probably is another reason why they're not doing this live, just in case anything really bad happens. Because at the end of the day, like, as you see in this video, like, one of the shots, like, they're shooting paintballs forever, and then one of the shots, they're like, oh, well, this is something experimental, and you can see the car is on fire there. It shoots a ball of fire at the car. Like, if you did that at the other robot, that person would bake.
Yeah,
that, you know, someone would get hurt if that happened. And I assume this is all for, like, you know, promotional material, and they wouldn't do anything like that, you know, during the actual fight. But, like, yeah, I mean, if they do this properly and it's like all of that sci-fi that we've ever seen, if it's like Mech Warrior, someone is legitimately going to get hurt.
Yeah, potentially so. So I guess finally, when is it happening? We don't even know when we'll be able to see it because it's not broadcasting live, right? But
exactly.
It's happening in September.
It's going to happen in September. It was originally supposed to happen in probably August, but then there were, like, logistical issues. They found this venue and they're like, oh, actually, we don't know if it can hold, you know, 6 tons worth of robot. So we're going to look for somewhere else. Like, there were structural issues and that sort of thing. So it's happening in September. It's going to be live broadcast on Megabots' social channels, or broadcast in some capacity. And they haven't told us where. So I'll be interested to see. They told me in the past, like, oh, we want to have it on, like, a aircraft carrier or something, like, super extreme like that. So it'll be interesting to see if it is actually as cool as that. I don't know. It could just be in, like, the Oracle Arena.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to do it, you might as well do it right. And
exactly. The
aircraft carrier sounds about right. So Mike Murphy from Quartz, QZ.com. Where else can people follow all your work online?
I am on the internet everywhere, but mainly at Twitter at MCWM.
Awesome. Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate you taking time tonight to join us on this.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm sure we'll be checking in with you once the actual robot war has happened.
Sure.
If we're still here.
if we live yeah. to tell the tale. All right. Take care, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
So we got some feedback.
All righty.
Keith George, an educational technology specialist for the Alabama State Department of Education, also known as Big Tech Coach on Twitter, wrote in about our discussion yesterday with Lisa Beyer about internet safety education. Keith says, schools across the country are teaching digital literacy to students of all ages. In another comparison to sex ed, however, waiting until students are in high school, even in middle school, is probably too late. I am a Google certified trainer, and Google recently unveiled Be Internet Awesome, a curriculum for grades 3 to 5 that covers, among other topics, protecting your digital footprint. But the leader by far in internet safety education is commonsensemedia.org, with their curriculum that can be used with students as young as kindergarten. I am a Common Sense Media ed tech mentor, and this program is nationally recognized for its effectiveness. Lessons cover internet safety, privacy and security, digital footprint and reputation, and many more areas. This curriculum is provided 100% free to schools and educators, and there's a wonderful family education program as well.
I love Common Sense Media. Like, I use it all the time for knowing whether, or for trying to figure out whether the movies I remember as a kid mm-hmm. actually are good for mm-hmm. my
Gremlins?
Young kids.
No.
Right? Like, I look at these movies that I remember watching really young, and then I put it into Common Sense Media, and it lists all the details as far as, like, well, you might not want to show it to a 4-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. And then I realize, wow, I was watching some pretty interesting films at a young age.
It's also helpful for Netflix shows, which yeah. are weirdly rated, and
yeah.
you know, you don't they don't follow the same standards, and yeah. so it's good for that. And
I mean, it's fantastic for all that stuff, for getting some insight onto what's good for children you know, when it comes to content. I didn't know they had an educational arm yeah. curriculum around it,
and it's changing so fast, because, you know, I have kids that are 2 years apart from each other, and even the way that my daughter, who's 14, was educated about this stuff versus my twin boys, who are 2 years younger, yeah. were educated. Like, they've caught on. Everything's changing. And, the teachers are their teachers are more, a lot of them grew up with some sort of social media. Like, you know, they had experiences on MySpace that they wish they had, you know, not had, that sort of thing. So
all of those blinking flash yes, tags, blink
yeah,
tags
very,
and stuff.
Very embarrassing.
So embarrassing.
So, yeah, I mean, more and more of us are thinking about our digital footprint, which is something that we never had to, you know, think about, because
yeah.
the internet wasn't around when we were doing all that crazy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine they're learning as they go too, because this is a constant problem. So every year, teachers are getting more aware of what's happening, understanding how to work around it, how to work with kids and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's great that there's some curriculum options out there. And I had completely forgotten that Google had announced Be Internet Awesome a few months ago. I think we actually talked about it on the show.
You're Internet Awesome, Jason.
Thank you. You are too. We're all Internet Awesome, aren't we?
Burke is also pointing out Larry Magid, who comes on Twitter a lot. He has a he works in kids safety. Look at, just Google Larry Magid, and you'll find all of his helpful stuff.
Well. Yeah, what is it? It's connectsafely.org. So he's got a bunch of good stuff there as well. TNT's fan of the day is Troy Wolf, who sent us this photo on Twitter and Instagram, actually, a few different places, making sure we get it, saying, "I don't really watch. I listen while in my International Pro Star Plus." And I was like, what is an International Pro Star Plus? That is a fantastic dash there. It's actually a really nice looking, I don't know how to rate long haul trucks, but it looks nice to me. So apparently, while he's cruising across the U.S. or wherever he drives his long-haul truck, he's listening to TNT.
I am thankful for our truckers who bring me a steady stream of Echo Dots to my door, and also for listening to us. Thank you.
We thank you for all of these things, whether you had anything to do with it, Troy, or whether you didn't. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. You can post that on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it.
And finally tonight, we know that many of you like to listen to us at higher speeds, and that is okay. You do you, but Paolo Ughetti, a writer at The Ringer, says you might be sacrificing comprehension for speed. To be fair, he says that it's probably fine to speed up conversational podcasts like ours a reasonable amount, and you won't lose any of the content. But with denser topics, your comprehension will suffer after you speed up 50% compression, or that's 2x speed. This is a decade-old research by Raymond Pastore of Penn State. He says we overload the working memory by listening too fast. So
I can't listen faster than normal. And I've tried. They pointed out in the article that I think it was like 1.2 or 1.25.
That's the sweet spot.
If you're going to speed up, that's the point at which you can still speed it up and still comprehend it at roughly the same level as if you were listening at normal speed. But even that, like, I feel like maybe it's just the podcasts that I listen to are far too information dense, and I want to learn as much as possible from that information. And I feel like so much of it just skips right past me if I'm listening fast. I might be able to listen to more shows, but my retention of that, like, I totally read through this. I was like, yes, yes, yes. I feel this every time I think I need to speed up podcasts. So I just don't even try anymore.
I don't either. And I don't speed up audiobooks. You know, we've talked about this before. Some people speed up TV shows, like on like stuff that they watch on YouTube or other video apps mm-hmm. that you can speed up. That sounds crazy to me too. It's also just this idea of like having, I mean, there are so many podcasts now. There are so many, and just feeling like if you're a completionist, you know, it can get completely overwhelming.
Yeah.
And you feel like you have to get through all of them. So yeah, it's, I can't do it. I just have to accept that I might miss something. And also the more edited podcasts, you mm-hmm. miss a lot. Like the ones that have like a lot of sound, like I listen to a lot of Radiolab. It's like very sound intensive.
Oh, yeah.
And I think speeding up those kinds of shows, you lose a lot too.
Yeah, because they spend a lot of time. They go through great pains on a lot of those podcasts that are highly produced to make sure that things sound just right, that this music or this sound or everything tucks under at exactly the right point. They've spent hours editing it all together. When you're compressing it, you're literally pulling out chunks of audio throughout, and it just compresses everything. And so it messes with the timing. It messes with the actual sound of those elements. It's just, I don't know. I mean, to someone who maybe respects production, it's kind of a disrespectful thing to do, right? It's like, I don't care what kind of work you went into here. I'm going to make it sound completely different. And as a listener, I guess that's your choice to do and everything. But I know what it's also like on the other side of that, to be like, no, that's not how I intended mm-hmm. it to be.
Yeah. I say listen how or watch however you want us, as long as you listen or watch every single day.
Yeah. And if the majority of you are speeding up this show, then we're going to start talking slower, so that when you speed it up, it's the normal speed.
I can't do that.
Okay. Okay, maybe we won't do that. TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twitch.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
And subscribe to the show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tell me how fast or slow you listen to our podcast, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director, Victor. Thanks to Burke for helping out here in the studio. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.
High five.